We're looking at Deuteronomy chapter 4, which is going to be page 159. Page 159 there in the Bibles there in front of you. We're talking about Nexus, and if you're new to us, you may think, what in the world is that word? Nexus literally means a point or place of connection. And we are looking at the vision of launching a coffee house right here in downtown Cleveland. And so we've been working on that. We're going to have a website where people can go to in the next couple of weeks and DVDs of those things so that people will be able to see a video and kind of know a little bit more about what we're talking about. But we've been talking about this as far as a church, as far as what is our next step. And how do we go about doing this? I've gotten a lot of feedback from people that has been positive and just saying, yes, this is what we need to do. And this would give us a place to not only have our services in on Sunday morning, but give us a place in the community that is almost open 24/7. And so we're pretty much trying to mirror exactly the times that that people are downtown. And so that's what we're doing. So on your way out, if you haven't seen these pictures that are back here on this back table, that'll give you a pretty decent idea of what we're trying to do. And then I also wanted to wish you a happy Independence Day weekend. I hope that that's gone well for you. And love July 4th. Probably because as a kid, you know, you got to pop fireworks. You know, now then they've kind of taken some of the fun out of it, and it's like not everybody can pop fireworks. It's like illegal in a lot of cities, you know, even though we certainly had a lot in Lakewood that were not part of the big festivities. And I'm like going, all right, which one of you were illegal popping off fireworks? Those of you who live in Lakewood, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. And so I always loved July 4th because we'd get together as family and eat ice cream and, you know, everything bad for you and those types of things. And it's one of those things that we do in remembrance, don't we? Now, I know that for little kids, a lot of times it's like, hey, man, it's about the fireworks and the cotton candy and, you know, snow cones and whatever else that you get if you go to one of the big fireworks displays. But it's really much more than that, and we know that. It's really about celebrating, hey, here is who we are as a nation, and this is who we are as we celebrate Independence Day and we look back as to who we are and what we're trying to celebrate. So one of the things that I did was, as I was kind of reflecting back, one of the things that came across this morning, I don't know if you've seen it yet or not, but I totally admire those people who take risks. And I don't know if you saw that this thing was going to go down, if this guy was going to try this again. I'm going to read to you, this is straight from CNN, okay? This is from out of Bend, Oregon, that I'm sure all of us know exactly where that is. Using his trusty BB gun to help him return to Earth, a 48-year-old gas station owner flew a lawn chair rigged with helium-filled balloons more than 200 miles across the Oregon desert. Hold on a second here. I got to scroll down. Desert Saturday, landing in a field in Idaho. Kent Couch created a sensation in this tiny farming community where he touched down safely in a pasture after lifting off from Bend, Oregon, and was soon greeted by dozens of people who gave him drinks of water, local plumber Mark Hetz said. Quote, my wife works at the city market, Hetz said. She called and said the balloon guy in the lawn chair just flew by the market, and if you look out the door, you can see him. We go to look outside, and lo and behold, there he is. Now, anytime someone uses the phrase, lo and behold, okay, I'm from Arkansas, I know these things, that is usually a hick phrase, okay? You don't typically hear that one too much. Lo and behold, there he is. He says, let's see here, let me go on down. He's flying by probably 100 to 200 feet off the ground. He takes his BB gun and shoots some of the balloons to lower himself to the ground. When he hit the ground, he released all the little tiny balloons. People were racing down the road with cameras. They were all talking and laughing. Couch covered 235 miles in about 9 hours after lifting off at dawn from his gas station, riding in a green lawn chair rigged with an array of more than 150 giant party balloons. Sandy Barton, 58, who has lived her whole life in this town of about 300, said she and her brother-in-law were the first ones to reach Couch and shake his hand. Not much happens in Cambridge, she said, adding that about half the town turned out. Now, I'm just reading it, okay? He came right over our pea field, she said. he was coming down pretty fast. I'm like, wow, there's some action. She said Couch gave some of his balloons to local children. It was not clear where Couch went after he landed, probably far, far away from these people. Let's see here. And then it talks about how he began, and his wife thinks that he's crazy and nuts. So we all do. But, you know, when you look at a guy like that, I admire him for coming up with a plan. He also was brilliant enough to make sure that he got corporate sponsorships to make sure that he wasn't the only one paying for his little ride across Oregon into Idaho. And you know, as we look at guys like that taking enormous risks, what it always does for me is this. I then realize, hey, I'm not the only crazy one in North America. You know, it's guys like this that I go, well, at least I'm not doing that. And as we remember and try to look backwards, God has always placed things, and Independence Day is a perfect example of that, to remind us about who we are, and most importantly, who He is. And so this week, what I wanted us to talk about was remember, because it's in the Bible a lot. That word is all throughout Scripture. Jesus even would look at his disciples and talk about, hey, you need to remember. He even said, when you take communion, okay, you do this what? In memory or remembrance of me. So God sets up these physical things for us to remember. But I don't know about you. Last week, I had trouble finding my keys, you know, my car keys. And I sit there in disgust, not knowing where my car keys were. And I thought, God, how can I follow you if I can't even find my car keys? You know, at least those have some sort of physical thing that I know that they are around and I can point to it. But sometimes I feel like, God, how in the world can I follow you when I can't even find simple things and operate my life with simplicity? How am I supposed to find you? This last week, I'd been telling you over previous weeks that we weren't quite sure if we would wind up at the 515 building over here or not. There was another group that was wanting to rent that building, but we had been told that they were far, far apart. It probably wasn't going to happen. Monday afternoon, I get a call from Michael Loomis, who's our realtor that's usually running sound on Sunday mornings, and he said, I'm not quite sure how to... What is that? I'm not quite... Oh, you're fixing it. Thank you. I'm not quite sure how to tell you this, but they've pretty much in principle reached an agreement with these people. And I said, what? I thought they were far apart. And he goes, well, they've told them that they're going to sign this contract. And I was going, discouragement, you know? Discouragement. And I knew that the vision that we were trying to pull off was bigger than that space. It was just that when you've worked a ton of hours to envision yourself and put together business plans and all those other things that go along with it, you don't want to start over. It's just way too much effort, you know? And I was like, oh man. So I wrote our leadership team and said, hey guys and gals, I don't know what's going to happen here, but it doesn't look good. And I'm not sure what we're going to do at this point. While there may be other places, the bottom line is we don't know. And as much as we've been praying for God to protect that space, maybe this is not the right space. Maybe this is not the right time. And so all of them wrote back, and it was encouraging stuff. And it was like, God is bigger than this. And so if we need to go somewhere else, and that's fine. You know, the space is not going to dictate to us the vision. I mean, it was just a lot of great responses back. And so I just thought, you know, God, what are you up to? And what I had to do was I had to sit down and remember. And some of our own leadership team started going back and saying, hey, remember when we were about to launch the church and we thought we were going to be in this space? And then all of a sudden Pickwick opened up and we were like, wow, this is so much better than that other thing. Who cares about that? This is so much better. And all of them were going through and reminding each other of stories of this is how God worked. This is what he did. And maybe he's got something better for us. And you know, that was very healthy to do because it was a remembrance of who God is and how he worked with us, that he didn't just leave us out in the cold. And I thought, you know, that's what we've got to do. We've got to remember back. Well, then on Tuesday, my realtor calls me and he says, hey, guess what? They got the stuff back in from this other company and it's got a ton of terms and conditions and stuff like that. And they don't think that they're going to sign it. Matter of fact, they may just pull the plug on everything. And so you can see, man, my life is a roller coaster, you know. And I said, do me a favor, tell them not to call me until something is settled, because this is a roller coaster ride that I want off. This is not the way I want to live my life. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I get sick of those things, you know, and I'm just like, God, what are you up to here? You know, one day it's off, one day it's on, one day it's off, one day it's on. And no, I am sick of messing with this. I want you to look in Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 1 through 9. This is when the people of Israel was just about to enter the promised land, and they were getting their instructions. Now, unfortunately, this group did not make it in because of their disobedience. But these were the marching instructions that God had given through Moses. And look at it in chapter 4, verses 1 through 9. And now, Israel, listen carefully to these decrees and regulations that I am about to teach you. Obey them so that you may live, so you may enter and occupy the land that the Lord, the God of your ancestors, is giving you. Do not add to or subtract from these commands I am giving you. Just obey the commands of the Lord your God that I am giving you. You saw for yourself what the Lord did to you at Baal Peor. There the Lord your God destroyed everyone who had worshipped Baal, the god of Peor. But all of you who are faithful to the Lord your God are still alive today, every one of you. Look, I now teach you these decrees and regulations just as the Lord my God commanded me, so that you may obey them in the land you are about to enter and occupy. Obey them completely, and you will display your wisdom and intelligence among the surrounding nations. When they hear all these decrees, they will exclaim, how wise and prudent are the people of this great nation. For what great nation has a God as near to them as the Lord God, the Lord our God is near to us whenever we call on him? And what great nation has decrees and regulations as righteous and fair as this body of instructions that I'm giving you today? But watch out. Be careful never to forget what you yourself have seen. Do not let these memories escape from your mind as long as you live. And be sure to pass them on to your children and your grandchildren. Never forget the day when you stood before the Lord your God at Mount Sinai, when he told me, summon the people before me, and I will personally instruct them. Then they will learn to fear me as long as they live, and they will teach their children to fear me also. I'll be honest with you, this last week I got discouraged. When I got that phone call, I was like, oh, this is great. Nothing like unveiling the big vision, and a week and a day later, you know, possibly gone, and you've got to shift, and you got to do everything all over again. And I was just like, God, what are you up to? One of my friends says this. He says, you know what discouragement is? Discouragement is spiritual amnesia. Discouragement is spiritual amnesia. It's forgetting the faithfulness of God. And it was good for me to see those emails from our team reminding one another, you know, hey, this is how God has dealt with us in the past. He never let us down. He moved us to even a better place. This is so much better. Look at the landlord that we have in Nick Costas, how much he has been for us, not just neutral, but for us. You know, when I sat down with him to say, hey, here's the plan. Now, you have to understand, you know, Nick's getting paid some rent for us to be here, for me to sit before him and say, hey, we may be moving at some point in time, and this is what we're going to do. It would be very easy for him to say, well, I guess that's okay. But instead, he was like, this is what you need to do. I see this very clearly. This is going to be great for you all, and I would love to know that you're within about 100 feet of me here. And, you know, you can tell a lot about a person when it comes down to money, can't you? You can tell a lot. Now, he could have just said, well, I don't see how you can do this, you know. And then he said, well, hey, do I need to write letters of recommendation for you to anybody? I'll write a letter of recommendation. What do you want me to say? What do you want me to do? And you know something? God gave us a terrific man to be in his building, because not is he just kind of neutral, he's for us. And it was what I had always prayed, and I've still got it in my journal. God, we want to be at a place that they don't just kind of say, okay, this would be good, but that they would say, I'm for you. That they would see us as a positive impact for the city. And I still look back at that. And you know why? Because of what God did right here with the people of Israel. What did he do? Remember when. You need to remember. Don't forget. And you know something? In our country, we do the exact same thing. We set up holidays with certain things attached to it. We all know for July 4th what it truly symbolizes. It's not just about fireworks, right? We know this. But the important thing is, what are we teaching other people about? What are we teaching our children that it's about? Do we take time to help them understand? Yes, we're going to go have some fun on this day to celebrate what God has given us through all these people who have sacrificed their lives. And so this day is a celebration to remember all of those things that happened. And you know something? God gave us a great plan here. The first one was for the nation. If you want to kind of apply it to us, it's for the church. It's to remember, how has God worked within us? How has God shaped us? How has God formed us? I know that as I was thinking back this last week, I was thinking back to all the discouraging times at the very beginning of Gateway, and how I would lay there awake at night, mind racing. Okay, I don't know if your mind works like mine, but I can sometimes go to sleep when I've got concerns on my mind. But about 2 o'clock in the morning, I'll wake wide up and my mind is going 180 miles an hour. And I've had people come to me before and say, well, you just need to pray and then God will let you go back to sleep. I got news for you. I've done that a million times. It doesn't work for me. And I've just learned I'm along for the ride. I'm along for the ride. Wherever my brain's going to go, I'm along for the ride. And I remember laying there awake. I would get out of bed, go downstairs. Sherry can tell you this is absolutely true. Go downstairs, lay on the couch, and I would sit there and think, God, who is going to show up to this thing? A new church in downtown Cleveland, this is not exactly what people are doing. You know, this is not exactly what's happening down here. This is not exactly what's opening down here. And I remember through that entire process wondering, who is going to show up to this thing? And more importantly, who would even stay? They may show up to see what it is, but who's going to stay? And I want you to know that last Sunday, we had our high attendance day ever for Gateway, and it was during the summer. And if you would have asked me a year and a half ago when our high attendance day would have been, I would have said something like Easter, or are we doing like a Christmas Eve service, or, you know, are we doing a baby dedication where like 40 people come, you know, and there are all the relatives and stuff. Now, we've had bigger days as far as, you know, like we would hit like 80 or something like that, but we would have mission teams in. I'm talking real raw data, all right? I'm not talking about, hey, a group of 40 came in from out of town, okay? Yes, the numbers show that, but the real raw data, when we take that stuff out, 61 adults, and guess what? 6 kids. It was shocking to me, and no less on a summer Sunday. That is not when you hit high attendance days within churches, okay? That is not it. And if you've been around church, you know you get this thing called the summer slump usually, all right? That's just the way it is. People are gone on vacations. That's fine. No big deal. But it was one of those things that I had to remember back. And it was like God took me back to that and said, you remember when you lay around on your couch and you were like, oh, my goodness. I was like, oh, yeah. And then God was like, do you remember when 1 month after you launched, you know, 1st of May, Sherry came to you and she said, I'm bleeding. It was on a Sunday morning, 10 minutes before I was to speak. And we weren't sure that baby was going to make it. And do you remember how the doctor looked at you and said, she's down. She's going to have to quit work. It's all on you. She can't go up and down stairs. We're living downtown. And God was like, do you remember that? I was like, oh, that was not a good time. It was like my right arm had been cut off, you know, because there was Sherry on the couch, you know, like she normally is. No, I'm kidding. There was Sherry on the couch. Everybody's like, uh-oh, yes, I'm in trouble. That's okay. I've learned if you just stay in trouble, you don't ever have to wonder, am I out? Am I in? You just stay in trouble. And you're like, of course I'm in trouble. But she would be there on the couch and, you know, to make it funny, because you had to break some sort of monotony, I would walk in and I'd be like, are you ever going to get up and do anything around here? You know, just to be silly and stuff. And we would laugh about it. You know, when you're going through that, man, you got to fish for things to make yourselves laugh. And then, you know, now we have Josiah, you know, and here he is. And then it wasn't but a few months later that Jason and Carrie called us and we were going out to Crocker Park to eat. And I don't remember exactly what we were doing even that evening. I just remember us all going. And Jason said, in only the Jason Brumbaugh way, I may have cancer. And if you've been around Jason, you know that he's not going to give you a whole lot of prehistory to things. He's just going to pretty much tell you, hey, this is where it is. And I was like, oh, it's not cancer. It's going to be like a bad virus or something. You know, it's going to be bad bacteria or something, you know. You're allergic to something. And he's like, oh, they've said that it might be cancer. I'm like, oh, okay. And it wasn't, but maybe a week and a half later after that, they were like, yeah, it's cancer. Well, here was the other couple that helped us start the church. And I felt like my left arm was cut off. And I'm like, okay, God, first of all, I never thought this thing would work to begin with, you know, unless you really intervened, because it wasn't going to be anything man-made. And now then Sherry's on the sidelines, and now then Jason is going to the sidelines because he had to go through all the chemo and radiation. If you've ever been around anybody that's going through that, man, they can't hardly do anything, you know? I mean, they just get wiped out from all the stuff. I'm like, you know, in the first year of the church plant, I'm thinking that this is not what we need to have happen, you know? My volunteers are, you know, not able to do anything. But it was like God had to take me back and say, remember this, and this is what God told the nation of Israel, remember. Remember, remember, because if you don't and if I don't, we will forget God's faithfulness. Because I don't know about you, but I have a tendency to remember the things I should forget and forget the things I should remember. Listen to this quote by C.S. Lewis. Here's what he said. We need to be reminded more than we need to be instructed. We need to be reminded more than we need to be instructed. How many times have you learned a lesson that God has taught you and you forget it and you make the mistake and you get back in the rut and you're like, man, I already learned this. How come I'm going back through it again? I'm so stupid. And you know something? We need to be reminded a lot more sometimes than what we need to be instructed. Now, do we need to be learning things about God? Absolutely. But if you're like me, you know a whole lot, but sometimes remembering in the crucial moment, you forget. In our booklet that we put out about our ministry report, as we talk about remembering, one of the things that we have to keep in front of us as we go towards launching this thing called Nexus, a place of connection, is remembering why. Why are we doing it? Is it so we'll have a cool place to meet? That cannot be the reason. Will it be a cool place to meet? Yeah. But that's not the reason. Is it so that we can say, wow, you know, look at the coffee and food and look at all these people? That's not the right reason. The right reason that we have put in our ministry report that many of you all have already received and they're on the back table, there's a quote underneath on the first page. It's by George Mueller. And here's what he says. I simply say the cross must be raised again at the center of the marketplace as well as the steeple of the church. I am claiming that Jesus was not crucified in a cathedral between two candles, but on a cross between two thieves, on a town garbage heap, at a crossroads so cosmopolitan that they had to write his title in Hebrew, Latin, and Greek, at the kind of place where cynics talk smut, and thieves curse, and soldiers gamble, because that is where he died. And that is what he died about. And that is where churchmen ought to be and what churchmen should be about. And you know something, as we remember, it is so important that we keep in front of us why we're doing what we're doing, why we choose to be Gateway. It's not so that we can say, wow, we meet in this cool comedy club, or hey, we're going to make this really outstanding. That is not the reason. And it cannot be the reason. And as a church, if we're not careful, that's where we can end up. And we have to remember why we're doing what we're doing. So first of all, he instructed a nation. The next part he says, hey, for parents and for future generations, make sure that you instruct them. That's why it's so important that with what we do with our children's ministries and things like that, that it's not just, you know, 4 points about God, but it's about stories. Because how do you capture the imagination of a child? We all know what it is. It's by throwing an algebra book in front of him, right? I mean, we're all captured by that, right? If X is equal to 2 and Y is equal to 4, then X plus Y equals 6, right? I mean, every kid's enamored by that. Isn't that why you went to school? Of course not. What are we enamored by? What are we connected with? We're connected with story. Do you maybe sometimes now know why Jesus chose stories? It's because he knew it would make the connection. They wouldn't forget it. And so the challenge that I give to our parents and those who will be helping out with childcare and things like that is to understand this. The children will probably forget your 4 points, but they won't forget your story. They won't forget your life. See, I don't remember, even though I grew up in more of a traditional church, now we would be considered contemporary at the time, but traditional in the way we went about it because we had Sunday school and church service and all this other stuff, and I was there all the time. I can't remember lessons, but I remember people and their stories. That's what I made a connection to. And as parents, grandparents, and those who are making an impact on all these little babies that we've got running around here, okay? We've got like 6 of them beneath like the age of, I think it's 1.5 or 2. All right, that's a lot for us. That is a lot for a smaller group, you know? Now, if you've got 200 people, I would say, yeah, you know, that's about the right number, but we've got a lot of ones. Guess what they're watching for? Not what we're going to teach them. Hey, here's point one about God and point two and point three. They're going to connect with story. And isn't that how we teach them anyway? We get out what? Children's books are what? They're stories, man. We need to connect the story of God to their life. We need to be able to share with them personally, hey, here's what I went through. I understand what it's like to be rejected. I understand what it's like to be the last person picked. Now, don't make it up. If you weren't the last person picked, don't tell that story, okay? Let me tell that story, all right? You say, hey, there's a loser. Go ask him. He looks like a guy that was the last person picked. Now, I will tell you, for my stature, man, I was usually the last person picked. If it was like a bunch of people that didn't know me, oh, yeah, because I was usually the shortest and the smallest. But here's what I had. Speed, baby. I had speed to burn. And after the first time of, you know, the football and the flag football and whatever else that we were playing, they started realizing he runs faster than the rest of us. I want him on my team next time because all we got to do is throw it past everybody. But you know something? Those are the stories that will connect. I have a feeling that Josiah is going to be vertically challenged, okay? I'm just guessing that just because I'm 5'0" and Sherry's barely 5'0", okay? He's probably going to be like, Dad, man, everywhere I go, everybody's like, oh, he's a short guy. I'm like, yeah, I know. I know what that's like. Personal stories. The next one is for all of us personally, not just with our children, but all of us personally. I'll tell you another story. When Sherry and I were living out in Berea, we moved like 5 times in the last 2 years. I never love moving at all. It's like my biggest pet peeve in the world, and God loves to make me move, I think, because of that. But while we were in Berea, Sherry wanted a dog. Okay, any of you around somebody that you're married and stuff, and they want an animal, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, this is going to be work. And so I was like, okay, what kind of dog you want? Now, I'm used to bigger dogs. Like, I had a Siberian Husky and, you know, and I'm used to that. And she goes, I grew up with a dachshund, and I just love dachshunds. And I'm like, those little things that look like sausages, and they got big legs, but they're only that tall, and, you know, they look like that sometimes on their back. And I'm like, they yap a lot. And she said, yeah, we had one. Her name was Gretchen. And of course, I did what every husband does, and that is I said no, you know, and realized that wasn't a good answer. And I learned, oh, you're supposed to say yes to those things. And so I looked in the paper and stuff like that, and I said, well, what do you want? And she goes, I want a female. And I was like, okay. And I looked in the paper, and I was like, whoa, females are really expensive. Can we not go with a male dog? Because they're like $150 cheaper. Oh, I really want a female. I really want a girl. I'm like, okay. And then I look, and I'm like, I start calling these places, and I'm like, Sherry, we can't afford this dog. I was like, call them. Do you realize how many hundreds of dollars they want for that little thing? We can't afford this. So we kept looking, looking, looking. And then I get this phone call out of the blue. And this is how the phone call went. Alex, this is Ron Wilson. I was like, okay. And he goes, what's your home phone number? And I gave him my home phone number. And I'm sitting there thinking, he's calling me on my home phone number. Why is someone calling me to ask me what my home phone number is who has just called? This is really odd. Well, come to find out that what had happened was he had us like on a speed dial and was needing to give the number to somebody else. And I'm sitting there going, secondly, who is Ron Wilson? The only Ron Wilson I knew was the limo driver for Sherry and my wedding. That's the only Ron Wilson that I knew. And so I called Sherry and I said, Sherry, who is Ron Wilson? And she goes, well, there's two. And I was like, okay, the one was the limo driver, right? And she goes, yeah. And she said, why? And so I told her the story and she goes, oh. She goes, well, that's odd. It's like, yeah. And she goes, the only other one is my great uncle, Ronnie. Isn't it great uncle? Isn't that right? Huh? Just uncle. Okay. My uncle, Ronnie. I was like, how come he didn't call and identify himself as Uncle Ronnie? Not Ron Wilson. I don't know him as Ron Wilson. I know him as Uncle Ronnie. I said, well, he asked for our home phone number. And that was a little strange. And so then we get this call. And what had happened was Sherry over Christmas, we were in Youngstown, over Christmas had told one of her relatives, oh, yeah, we'd really like a little dachshund and stuff like that. And she calls us. She says, hey, I got this coworker that's giving away dachshunds. I'm like, what's wrong with them? What's wrong with them? She said, no, she's been selling a bunch of them and she just wants them out, you know, for whatever reason. I'm like, okay. So I called up Sherry and I said, Sherry, have you been praying for this stupid dog? And she goes, no, I kind of gave up on it. And I said, well, there's evidently some of these in Youngstown. And I was like, if we're going to get one, we got to go tonight because she's just offering. Whoever gets there gets the dog. And so I called up and I said, ma'am, can you tell me a little bit more about the dogs? And she goes, well, they're 6 months old. And I'm like, ooh, they're really past puppy age and this is going to be hard to do potty training. And I was like, okay. And I was like, well, we really want a female. Yeah, I do have one of those. And I told Sherry, I said, well, let's go look at him. I said, but 6 months old, honey, if they're not potty trained, this is tough stuff. So we're driving over that way and called the lady to find out again. And she goes, well, hey, somebody else found out that these aren't miniatures. And they thought it was a miniature dachshund. And they don't want this other little female that's like 6 or 8 weeks old. And we're like, oh, okay. So we get there and we walk in and these little dachshunds are, you know, yapping. If you know dachshunds, man. And they're all just going nuts. And we look over there and there's little Harmony. Or at that time, we didn't have a name. We didn't even have a cage or anything. We went over there that night knowing we had to get the dog and get to PetSmart to get a cage and all this other stuff. And there she was sitting there and just looked at us. And we were like, wow. There she is. So we took her home, had her potty trained in a week. I kid you not. She was the greatest dog I've ever had doing that part of it. I mean, just amazing. I was like, I am the master of this, you know, even though I knew it had nothing to do with me, but, you know, nonetheless. And I want you to know that sometimes I forget when Harmony is around and God has to remind me, even in the small things that other people would say was insignificant to us, it's a constant reminder of how God cares about the small stuff in our lives and how God gave us that dog. You know, she's AKC registered and all this other stuff. The problem is she's a brat, you know, because we've spoiled her. So AKC or not, she needs to be labeled as brat because she is spoiled. But, you know, whenever I watch her, I have to remind myself at times, this is how God provides. He even cares about the small things. Sometimes we forget, don't we? We forget God's faithfulness. The other thing that I wanted to point out to you is for others around us. In Deuteronomy chapter 26, verse 11, here's what scripture tells us. Afterward, You may go and celebrate of all the good things the Lord your God has given to you in your household. Remember to include the Levites and the foreigners living among you in the celebration. You know, a lot of times what we always think is that people that were around at that time, it was just all the Israelites and that's who it was. But there were other people who had seen that, you know, they have the right God. They have the right way to go. And even in the Psalms, it talks about, and we'll say, let the tribe of Judah say this and let the people say this. And then it will say, let everyone else say. That was for the foreigners. That was those people around them that they had included in, because God had not called the Israelites to be the chosen people as far as a position. They were chosen to spread the message. The problem was it went to their head where they thought, hey, as the chosen people, it means chosen for a status. No. Chosen for a purpose. There's a difference. And they would miss it sometimes. They would forget. And you and I, if we're not real careful, we will forget. We will forget what God has called us to be and what God has called us to. I know that as we face this thing with fundraising and putting things together to do this stuff, you know, I just sit there and I go, how in the world are we going to pull this off? And I know this much, it won't be us. It will have to be God. And just like when I would lay awake at night wondering who in the world will come to this, and then God sent Jason and Carrie along, and then God sent a few more people to help launch the church, and now then God is continuing to add to us all of these brilliant people and people with great hearts and people who are saying, what do you want me to do? How can I serve? How can I help get this thing? You know what it tells me? God is beginning to move, because no longer is it just, hey, I've got this vision that I would like to share with our leadership team. The leadership team began to embrace it and was like, yes, we really feel like this is the way to go. Now then what's happening is the rest of the church is saying, this isn't an Alex vision. This isn't the leadership team said this is what we kind of need to consider doing. It's becoming an us thing. And when that happens, what God can do through a group of people is absolutely astounding. But we have to remember how God has brought us through the tough times. I want to just quickly share with you, and then we'll be done. Because people have asked this question, and it's a great question. Let's say we launch this thing and it's going great guns and we actually turn a profit. What are we going to do? Because we're a nonprofit, right? Incidentally, nonprofits can make a profit. It's just that a lot of times you don't hear too much about it, all right? For instance, a lot of your hospitals and that sort of thing, they're nonprofits. But I wouldn't say that we walk by going, wow, there's a bunch of poor people in there. You know, I mean, we usually know, hey, those people are kind of doing good. I mean, Cleveland Clinic, not a small thing. University Hospital, not real small, all right? So they're doing fairly well. But what does it do for us? From the very beginning in my heart, what I felt like God was doing was that he was saying to me, here's what will happen. At some point in time, you're going to turn a profit. You've got to figure out as a nonprofit what you're going to do with that, okay? And I felt like in my heart what God was saying is this. This is the way that you can maximize missions in Cleveland and around the world. You need to have a plan in place so that when those profits come along, you know exactly what you're going to invest in. For instance, most of you know the things that we've done with Westside Ecumenical Ministry, where, you know, just a few weeks ago we had about 700 kids and their moms and dads there, and we threw this free carnival for them. Okay. That's a perfect place to continue to invest the money. You know that we've planted flowers and trees and cleaned up downtown. It's a perfect avenue. There'll be other avenues that open up, but also you know that we sent a team to Uganda where they did water filtration and all those other things and brought clean water to the people of Uganda. And we had to raise funds to do all those things. Guess what? If this goes the way we would like for it to go, and I believe it's a God-honoring thing for it to go this way, and that's why I believe that it will actually happen. And while we had to raise the money to do a few water filtration things, can you imagine if God blessed us with $50,000 in profits, what we could do? It would be absolutely astounding. What if God blessed us with $100,000 in profits? What could we do then? What would the city reap from that? And what would the community, and ultimately, what would the world reap from that? And so as we progress, and next week is we're going to talk about putting a lot of these pieces of the puzzle together. And I'm going to explain to you how a lot of these things are going to work. And I'm going to, a lot of you ask questions, and I've been pooling all those together to kind of create a frequently asked questions page, because you asked all the questions we've been asking. And I think we've got the answers for those now. And so you'll have all that in front of you. Some of you have already begun to write me and say, how can I serve? I've got a degree in marketing. I've got a degree in this. Or, hey, I know how to do grant writing. And I know how to, you know, would that work? Yeah. You know, and some of you have come forward. And then there's others of you that are like going, I'm not really sure how I fit in the piece of the puzzle. I'm all on board. Tell me what you need me to do. And that's powerful. But what we have to remember the entire time is, why are we doing what we're doing? Why is Gateway doing what it's doing, regardless of whether their Nexus comes about or not, okay? Nexus is going to be a mission of the church, but it won't be the mission, all right? It'll just be a mission, a huge part, but not the. Who are we supposed to be as those who follow after Christ? Who are we supposed to be? We need to be the people that remember the faithfulness of God. I want everyone just to bow their heads and close their eyes this morning. And I don't know about you, but a lot of times I just forget, man. I get into the day-to-day stuff and, you know, bills and all these other things, and stuff just doesn't go right. And my personal relationships sometimes don't go well. And I wonder, what is going on? And maybe that's you. Maybe that's you, where you've maybe forgotten how God has been faithful, how God has gotten you through some really tough times and some rough patches. And you just need to remember. And God's going to give you some physical things to demonstrate spiritual realities, just like God did with the simple thing as our dog. It's a physical thing that reminds us of a spiritual reality, that he hasn't forgotten about us. Even what we would consider small, he hasn't forgotten. He is faithful. Father, I pray right now that we would be faithful, that we would understand that who you've called us to be is more important than whether or not we launch Nexus, because Nexus is not, it is not who we really are. Nexus is just a symbol of who we are. But Father, I pray in all of our lives that you would just bring back to memory those spiritual markers, those physical things that would remind us on a daily, weekly, yearly basis why we follow you, and that we would remember your faithfulness to us when it just doesn't seem like our relationships aren't going well, our job isn't going well, or maybe it's in flux, or the bills are piling up. So God, help us this morning to remember. And so, Father, I just come before you and confess that, you know, I've had some spiritual amnesia. I've allowed discouragement to take over. And certainly there's going to be disappointing days, but Father, I just pray that we wouldn't allow it to turn into discouragement. And so God, help me as a leader, help me as a husband and as a father to remember and share those stories of how you have provided. And just when we thought, how is this going to work, or how will things turn around, that you show yourself faithful. So, Father, we give you our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's just take some time this morning just to reflect and remember.